Welcome back. This is Chris with the Chris Gilbertson Show, where we focus on the secrets of the extraordinarily successful. And I interview experts and multimillionaires in areas of business, real estate, internet marketing, and key areas to help you excel as an entrepreneur in your journey to success. And today, I'm really excited to welcome back Tony Litster. This is his idea for a show to help you as an entrepreneur that may be struggling through different processes in your life. And one of the key areas that we're going to talk about today is addiction. And it's a subject line that I really want to talk about as well, too, and learn from Tony on, because a lot of us struggle with it. And there's a lot of areas in our life that we don't even realize that we're addicted to, whether it's with internet marketing for quick fixes and solutions, whether it's in relationships. You know, Tony has coached and helped hundreds of individuals all across the world to help them become better business entrepreneurs, have better relationships with their family. But one of the key areas that he focuses on, and he has a phenomenal, unique strategy to help you bust through and break through addiction patterns. And that's why I welcome Mr. Tony Litster back to the call. So, Tony, thank you so much for coming back on the show here. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me on the call again, Chris. This is fun. Love talking about this kind of stuff. It's funny when you talk about interviewing multimillionaires. I guess I have made millions in my life, and then I also lost millions. So I can somehow fit somewhere into that mix, right?
Absolutely. That's what I love having you on the show, is you're so open with everything, and you explain how you went to that and then came all the way back. It's great, though. You know, that's the stuff we want to hear.
There's this reality side to success that most people that I've met that have made millions of dollars have also lost millions of dollars. And I didn't want to listen to that when I was making, you know, the first couple million that I made in real estate. And I really didn't want to listen to that when I was losing that money. So now that I'm back on the upswing again, you know, with businesses that are flourishing, it's funny to me how much I resisted it. It's almost like the resistance of the learning experience brought it on. But anyway, so keep going. This is good. We'll talk about that on another call.
I love it. No, that's fantastic. So, yeah, I really want to just dive right into this topic, because I have struggled with this area in my life, and my addiction problem is one with internet marketing, with feeling that I need to buy the next product for the solution to fix, you know, whatever it is that I'm not paying attention to in my life. But a lot of people struggle with it in a lot of other areas, too, that they may not even realize it, that they're addicted to something. So I'd love if you just kind of could start out with talking about addiction and where it comes from.
Well, first of all, let me start by saying the reason I'm an expert in addiction is because I've had so many. You know, right. Too often, one of my pet peeves is that sometimes it feels like the only people that are willing to talk about addiction are people that went to school for it. And so they read about a bunch of addiction, and they read about what the addict said to the therapist in the case study. But I think about, like, I've gone through therapy. I've done, like, I went to $150,000 worth of seminars. I spent over $100,000 on coaches. Mm-hmm. I know that I am never 100% transparent with the person that I'm talking to. You know, I might tell them, you know, when my marriage was struggling, I would go to a marriage counselor and I would tell them like 70% of what was going on, but I didn't tell them everything that was going on. And so there's this element to when I see someone that look, I don't want to knock someone that has a degree, because they're probably way smarter than I am, and they probably have really legitimate case study driven solutions. So I don't want to knock them, but I sort of got this experience in talking to some of the, quote, experts in the field of addiction in dealing with my own compulsive behaviors in life, that it was like taking driver's education from somebody who read the car manual, and they were sitting in the passenger seat saying, this is how a car works. Go. But they never had driven the car. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I come to this having had the experience of sort of a reckless few years as a teenager, and then spending the next 20 years trying to eliminate from my life the habits I picked up as a reckless teenager. And so, yeah, I'm going to speak to this from, you know, a very personal aspect of dealing. You know, like, I come from a family of very addictive patterns. Anybody that drinks in my family is generally an alcoholic. I've got a couple of family members that have died because of drug use. I've watched there's several of them that have picked up approved addictions, which would include prescription drugs, workaholics, becoming like hyper focused on their church, and basically that's their fix, is that they stay super busy with their church. Food addictions, pornography addictions. Like, I've just watched it my whole life and dealt with my own, you know, like, unique little combination of addictive elements. And so I'm going to come to this just from a realistic standpoint of going, here's what I learned in my journey, and since that time have worked with people with their addictions for several years. And, you know, I've got a nonprofit online that helps people with internet addictions. And, you know, we've got a lot of programs on there to help people anonymously. But anyway, so I'm not, I have to give a little disclaimer. I'm not a licensed doctor, therapist, you know, lawyer. I do have a driver's license, and that's about it. And so this is just my opinion. This is just my opinion, and I think I'm right.
Well, we want to hear it.
Okay, so a friend of mine, Mr. Dave Blanchard, with the Augmentino Group, did a survey of, I think it was around, at the time, it was around 3,000 entrepreneurs. And he found that if the entrepreneur had a couple of components, and I want to, I hope I quote him correctly on this, but something to the effect of, if they had the ability to envision something that hadn't happened yet, if they had the ability to imagine an outcome that hadn't happened, and they had the ability to feel, to actually emotionalize it and feel it like it was real, that 98% of those that had those two attributes also had some sort of internet addiction. Now, this is what's fascinating. You think about an entrepreneur. What is an entrepreneur? It's somebody that goes, I want to change my life. I want to improve. I want to have an outcome that I don't have right now. And they use their imagination to envision something in the future that they don't have. And they get imaginative enough about it that they actually feel it as if it's real in their body. And I mean, that's an entrepreneur. I don't know any entrepreneurs that aren't visionaries. And so the aspect of being an entrepreneur already opens us up to a potential for some sort of addiction. Now, he made a great distinction. This is Dave Blanchard that taught me this, that there is a difference between fantasy and mental rehearsal. Fantasy is when we imagine some outcome that hasn't happened, and we feel it as if it's real in our body, and then we just wait around for the universe to provide it for us. Right? So we've all seen The Secret, or at least a lot of us have, and The Secret talks about visualization, and it's a little bit misleading in the way that it's displayed there, because you hear these people get up and say, well, I wrote myself a check for $1 million, and then I envisioned it. Right. You know, Jack Canfield says that on The Secret. And then suddenly I got a check for $1 million. Well, what he didn't elaborate on is that he then spent, you know, I think it was years, but at least months, doing events, writing books. They went around with the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, which has sold 500 million copies. They went around to like 100, I heard him talk about this recently. I think he said 120. I could be wrong on the number, but a lot of publishers.
Right.
And got rejected over and 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 over. And so there's this element of we want success in our life, so we do these visualization exercises. We visualize what it is we want. And the difference with fantasy and mental rehearsal is that with mental rehearsal, we envision work as part of the process. You know, that four-letter word that entrepreneurs don't want to hear. We all want a business that flows on its own, that's effortless. You know, it's funny. I have several online businesses that are automated. And so several times a week we'll have different calls that are running that I'm not doing. And we've got websites that are delivering product and that, you know, I get sales every week from these different products that I've created. And people go, oh, man, that must be awesome. Have these automated funnels and you've got thousands of people in your programs all over the world, dozens of countries. I get emails from all over the world from people in my programs, and they go, wow, that just must be great. You can just like, you know, I was in an event this last week, and my phone would beep, and I'd look, and I'd go, oh, cool, I just got a sale. And people were like, wow, man, you're sitting here at this event, and you're just selling stuff while you sleep. Right? So there's that aspect of business, and yes, that is absolutely true. I have that. And it took 3 years to build it. And I went totally, absolutely broke on the way there. You know, that was the bottom side of my real estate investments. Once those all ran out, my savings ran out. And so it was years and years and years of learning the process, of painstakingly creating product, of creating online systems and funnels that were tight, and learning through mistakes and through things crashing and through websites getting hacked and all this stuff, right? So there's this element of we want something, but we don't want to pay the natural law price for that thing. We'll look at our garden and we'll go, oh, man, I can't wait to kick back and eat a fresh tomato sandwich and cut a cucumber right out of my garden and eat a carrot out of my garden, right? So we have this vision of a harvest. But then when it's springtime, the dirt is hard. We don't want to till it. There's all these weeds on it from last time. We don't want to have to deal with those. We don't want to have to, like, it's fun planting. We plant these seeds and we get all excited, but then like 2 weeks later when all that's growing is weeds, we're like, this stinks. I don't want to do this. Right? So there's this element of where fantasy is where we envision an outcome that hasn't happened. We feel it in our body. It could be something totally unrealistic. Could be something absolutely realistic. But we imagine it and we feel it in our body, and our brain releases this chemical called norepinephrine. And that is the chemical of experiencing it. Very, very powerful chemical. And so in our brain, we create a space where that world exists. And then we come back to the regular world, and it doesn't look anything like our fantasy. Like, man, my garden just looks like it's full of weeds. I didn't weed my garden last year. And I seriously had weeds that were like 7 feet tall.
Wow.
It was funny. Hardly anything grew. I just got too busy. And at the end of the summer, I was like, what a shame. All those seeds I planted, they couldn't grow because I didn't weed it. But we look at our garden and we go, it's full of weeds. But we look at our relationship and go, this isn't the fantasy relationship I imagined. Right. Like, in my fantasy relationship, there's someone that's just there to serve me and to meet my needs and to, you know, to, like, make me happy and all these things. That person never is tired and never is stressed and never gets upset, never has bad breath. Like, what? Like this? So what happens is when we create this fantasy world in our mind and we feel that norepinephrine and we come back to the regular world and it doesn't look that like we think it should, then our body goes into this sort of a shock state, a depressed state where we experience cortisol, which is a very destructive chemical in the body. It's a high-stress chemical. It's similar. If someone's getting attacked by a bear, their body would release a lot of cortisol. And so then we get all depressed about it and all verklempt, and so then what do we resort to? We go back to our fantasy land, and we imagine this world in our mind. And he pointed out that there's a couple of components of the things that we imagine. The difference between a fantasy and a mental rehearsal, basically, that a fantasy, we are seeking to avoid pain and avoid struggle. So basically, we don't want any effort. And in a mental rehearsal, we anticipate and prepare for work. So it's like this. I have a project this year that I want to participate in. I've done this before, where my friend has a nonprofit. I sit on the board, and they go down to Africa, into Kenya, and they build a school. And I went a few years ago and really, really enjoyed it. Well, I want to go this year. And I've been talking to him about it. And so rather than just fantasizing myself going to Africa and being there building a school and having this cool experience and going on safari and playing in the Indian Ocean and all these different things, rather than just fantasizing that, what I'm doing is I'm looking at it logistically and I'm going, I see the outcome. I go, yeah, I want to be there. And I go, okay, well, that's going to cost $4,000 to go, because we pay for part of the school and our flights and stuff like that.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay. So then logistically, in my mind, I go, okay, how am I going to get that $4,000? And I could go do an event. I could sell product. I could go do a fundraiser. You know, I could go to a corporation and get corporate sponsorship. I'd go to people that I know and ask if they'd sponsor it. I could take it out of my savings account. I could create an online funnel and sell some online product. I could get on and do one of those programs where you ask people for donations and you're working towards a great cause. I don't know what it's called. I've seen some people do it lately. You know, there's like lots of different ways, but in my mind, I'm creating a logistical plan of, okay, I'm going to go and
right.
create this thing. And then I'm also saying, okay, so if I'm going to be gone for 2.5 weeks, I don't want to work while I'm there. So then I have to say in my mind, okay, I need to create some extra money so that I don't miss any of my income. My family doesn't suffer because I'm gone, that they don't even notice a difference in that. You know, like all the bills get paid, everybody gets paid out. So that means I need to create additional revenue. Same thing, I mentally rehearse it. Whereas someone that fantasizes would go, oh, man, I'm going to someday go build a school in Africa, and they would look at pictures of Africa, and they'd feel all the emotions of Africa, and then they'd look around and go, man, it's just not happening, and they get all depressed.
Right.
So why do I bring up this whole component of fantasy and mental rehearsal and all the stuff with addiction? Because what happens is we literally get addicted to these chemicals in the brain. These chemicals that we feel when we use our imagination. And I'm going to give a loose definition of addiction. And obviously I'm not a scientist, so, you know, you'll have to just take it with a grain of salt because I probably don't have a clue what I'm talking about. addiction, in my opinion, I have to say things like that because there's people that have degrees. And they get
right.
on my case when I talk yep. with too much certainty.
Yep.
They're like, you can't make claims like that. What's your case study? What's your proof? And I'm like, well, I got 20 years of it.
Exactly.
I know what it is.
Yep.
I know exactly what it is. But anyway, I have to say things like that. I have to make ridiculous disclaimers so that the professionals don't make me stop talking. See, if I make yeah. ridiculous disclaimers, I can keep saying all this great stuff. Anyway. So, having run an addiction recovery program and not being an expert, I've learned how to get around the games. So, what's addiction? Addiction is distraction. It's a way to distract ourselves emotionally, to avoid feeling something uncomfortable, or to distract ourselves with a pleasurable feeling. And so, addiction, with this definition, could be anything we use to sort of get out of our mind. It could be food, could be sex, could be drugs, could be alcohol, could be work. I got a guy, an entrepreneur I'm coaching right now, really successful guy, 30 years of successful business. And one of the assignments I've been giving him is to take some downtime and just to listen to what's going on inside of him.
Yes.
And he's like, he says, I think I work just to avoid my anxiety.
Yep. Wow.
Right? I mean, so, and I know people listening to this are like, yeah, no kidding. Like,
yep.
A lot of times an entrepreneur, they don't know how to be still. It's just they stay chronically busy.
Right.
And it's not even productive. It's like, okay, must be busy. So they busy themselves all the time, never sit down and get still and think. And then they get so wound up by the end of the day, they have to escape. And then they just – I'll get into what's happening in addiction in a second. But anyway, so anything we use to distract ourselves can be an addiction. There can be positive addictions. Like, I know people that are addicted to exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I know people that, you know, that are addicted to their charities or their churches or whatever it is. And so it's not like that's like a – you know, who would look at exercise and say that's a bad thing? Well, if you're using it to escape from your inner demons, which we all have, that's
right.
The other funny part about it. We've actually created a world in which we think some people have it all together.
Yep.
Which is so funny. I was at an event recently,
is.
And I said, it totally is. I was at an event, and I asked the audience, I said, do you know anyone that has it all together in every area of their life at all at once? And this girl raised her hand, and she says, yes, I knew this girl in high school. She had it all together. And I'm like, in high school? I'm like, really? She's like, oh, yeah, she was perfect. She always did everything right. She was good. She got straight A's. She always, she like participated in all these activities. She was always nice. She was always happy. I'm like, so she had it all together in her relationships in high school? And she's like, well, she didn't have relationships. I'm like, okay, thanks. She had it all together in her finances? And she goes, well, yeah, her dad made a lot of money. I'm like, doesn't count. Daddy Warbucks doesn't count. It's fine if you get money from dad. I don't care. I wish my dad would give me money. But if you, but that doesn't count that you have that aspect of your life together. And to look at someone in 17, 18 years old, for me, when I was 18 years old, my body just made muscle. I didn't even hardly have to work out. I look at it now and I'm like, what's going on?
Those days are
I'm
great.
Doing all this effort. How come I'm not growing any muscle? Anyway. So we sort of bash that. But the reality of human nature is we don't have it all together in every area of our life. We create harmony and we address things as they come up. So sometimes we have to address our health, and sometimes we have to address our relationships, and sometimes we have to address our money, and sometimes we have to address our inner demons. And we just work between those. And if we can create some harmony there, then we'll talk about that here in a little bit of what steps we can take to actually create a little bit of harmony. We're never going to get balance. We're never going to get it to where everything is balanced, but we can get it where things are managed, create some harmony. So why do we get addicted? Because what happens is any type of addiction is going to cause our brain to release chemicals, generally endorphins, the feel-good chemicals, serotonin, dopamine, adrenaline, norepinephrine. These are said to be 100 times stronger than heroin.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if you've been around anyone using heroin. I have. And I've seen what people do when they're on heroin. And it's scary, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched the destruction that can happen there. Well, so we're talking about things 100 times stronger than heroin. And so what happens is in their brain, they are experiencing a high level of stress. And there's a couple of factors. I'm going to talk about the shame factor, and then I'm going to talk about the stress factor. So here's how the shame cycle works. Anytime we act out compulsively, once we're done acting out, this could be overeating, this could be like playing video games for 14 hours straight.
How would I know anything about that?
It could be, right? It could be acting out sexually, porn, masturbation, sex, anything like that, that where it's a compulsive behavior, which is super prevalent nowadays with the internet, even though no one wants to talk about it.
Right.
I was telling you this before we started this program. I did a workshop this last weekend, and it was for women entrepreneurs. And it was the program was called How to Make Love and Money Work. And it was a conversation of how to make your relationships and your business flourish. Because there's a lot of conflict when there's a relationship and a business, especially for women who are sort of breaking the gender roles when they
right.
open businesses. So I ended up doing a whole bunch of sort of like power coaching sessions. We do like a 30-minute session back to back to back to back to back over a couple of days. Ended up having a lot of conversations with different women. And I was shocked that like 90% of them, their husbands or boyfriends had an issue with pornography. It was a startling
wow.
number.
That really is 90%.
And then obviously shocking. That's not it's not like 90% of guys have a problem. It's only like 70% of guys have a problem. So I was just off on the demographic by 20%, but probably because there were not any old ladies in the room, and so the 80-year-old
right.
men weren't coming into my into my factory.
But
anyway,
still, wow,
so,
that's, yeah.
Yeah, no, look, it's a problem. And so here's what's happening in the brain. Somebody acts out compulsively. and they do it because it gives them a rush.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Most addictive behaviors either numb us or give us a rush. And so we act out compulsively, and afterwards, our inner dialogue is something like this. If anybody really knew me, they wouldn't love me. If they really knew how dark I just got, or this how out of control I was, they couldn't love me. And then we begin to beat ourselves up and say, I suck, I'm a loser, I'm a liar, I'm a hypocrite, I'm a fake, I'm a drunk, I'm a drug addict, whatever. I'm a pervert, mm-hmm. Whatever it is. Like, there's really super destructive. I used to look in the mirror when I was in the sort of the fits of my addiction. And I'd just be like, you are the biggest piece of shit ever. I mean, it was brutal. Like, I would never say that to another human being, and yet I would say it to myself.
Right.
You may have to edit your call now that I've sworn.
Well, no, it's real. I mean, we do that.
I know. Yeah, no, I cuss like a sailor when I'm talking to myself, but when I'm treating other people, I generally treat them with kindness. So what happens is, once we've gone through that shame, and we've determined that we are bad, that's really the message of shame, is that we are bad, then what we do is we go into what's called the control phase, and we start to try to control this through our behavior. We have to modify our behavior and improve our behavior to try and prove that we're not a loser. So we're going to make up for it. We're going to do extra good. We're going to overextend ourselves. We're going to, you know, we're going to be a good little Boy Scout and serve everybody or whatever it is, right? We're going to, if it's a food addiction, we're going to only eat carrots for the next 6 weeks.
Right, go to the extreme. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's the control phase. We go into this thing of we have to discipline this bad child and get the child back in order. And so we go through that, and what that leads to is that we get out of balance because we're not nurturing ourselves. We're not taking care of ourselves. We're over-pushing things, and we don't think we deserve to be taken care of or to be nurtured because we've been acting out, or we did act out. And that leads to a chemical imbalance within us. Now, as soon as we get chemically imbalanced, the hypothalamus gland in the brain wants to get things back in order. And the hypothalamus is in charge of cravings. And so if we get too far out of balance, the hypothalamus will create cravings for whatever behavior we have trained it to go after, whether that's food or sex or drugs or work or distraction or video games or Facebook or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start to crave it because by experiencing those chemicals in our body again, it will help us to get things back in order. That's the way we decompress our stress. We've taught our brain. That's the way we do it.
Wow.
So once the cravings kick on, the shame story picks up again. And the shame story says, see, here you are wanting to do the thing you swore you'd never do again. You are seriously a loser. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And that shame kicks in. And then if we resist long enough, then the limbic system of the brain, which is like the animal brain, it will take over, and it will chemically shut down the prefrontal cortex of the brain. And in the frontal cortex, this is where we think about consequences. It's what makes us different than a dog. A dog doesn't have a developed frontal cortex. So, or a lion. You know, when a lion is hungry, it goes out and chases the gazelle and eats it.
Right.
Just wants what it wants, and it goes and gets it. It does not have a developed prefrontal cortex. It can't do complex math. It can't create a life plan or a business plan, right? So as humans, we have that. Well, that's what kind of talks us out of acting out compulsively. Well, if we resist cravings long enough, the limbic system of the brain will chemically cloud out the frontal cortex, and we won't be able to hear our conscience very well. And then we act out compulsively again. And then as soon as we've acted out compulsively, the chemical makeup in our body is reset, and then the frontal cortex comes back, and we repeat the shame cycle over and over and over again. And what happens is, as we do this, the body becomes exhausted.
Right.
Because these chemicals require a ton of proteins and all kinds of minerals and all kinds of stuff to create these chemicals. They're very complex. And it exhausts our system. And so then what happens is when the body feels down and feels tired, it wants to feel up again. That's why when we get tired, we crave some sort of stimulant. Caffeine, sugar, highly processed carbs, something to stimulate the system quickly. Could be music, could be, you know, escape, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so what happens is we get exhausted, body feels down, brain says we want to fill up again. How do we fill up again? We experience those chemicals because they make us fill up for a little while. And so then we get cravings, we act out again, and it leaves us even further exhausted. And so it starts to create this gap where we become less and less satisfied and more hungry, basically, to, you know, for whatever the behavior is. It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
It's a crazy vicious cycle.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Hi, it's Chris, and you are listening to The Chris Gilbertson Show, where we focus on the secrets of the extraordinarily successful. And I just want to quickly share with you, if you are an entrepreneur, a business owner, an expert, you know, someone who maybe is an author that has a message that the world needs to hear, and you're looking for a new, simple way to reach a large audience, an affluent market, and have a blast doing it, I highly suggest you learn more about the power of podcasting and how it can truly help you in your business. And just really explode your brand, create instant expert and celebrity status for your business, as well as be able to reach an affluent marketplace. So head over to chrisgilbertson.com to learn more about the power of podcasting. And we're going to head right back into Tony Litzer's interview talking about how to overcome addiction.
So what happened is, what's happening is, anyway, that's why people get stuck in these addictive cycles and they don't know how to stop it. I'm going to talk about my experience of what has worked for me and that, you know, I currently have thousands of people in my programs and what can help there. But part of what I learned, I had the opportunity to study meditation with one of the greatest meditation teachers on the planet today. And he taught me that when the body feels stress, it's an uncomfortable feeling, right? So throughout the day, the body's going to accumulate stress. We're going to feel stress with the food we eat causes stress. There's going to be noise stress. There's going to be environmental stress. There's going to be mental stress, pressures on us, things we have to do. And when as we go through our day, the central nervous system accumulates stress. And that stress starts to build up and build up and build up and build up. And if we don't release it, then our brain starts to crave adrenaline to offset the stress. That's how the brain gets away from the uncomfortable feeling of stress is with adrenaline. Now, the primary way that our body releases stress is through rest. The challenge is that, you know, 100 years ago, people on average got 10 hours of sleep a night.
Right.
What do you think the average is nowadays?
I'd say 6.
Yeah, like 6 or 6.5.
Right.
And sometimes when I get 6, I'm really happy. I'm like, wow.
Right.
I'm asleep. Right?
So, exactly.
So when we don't get enough rest, there's an overaccumulation of stress in the nervous system, and the brain will crave adrenaline. And the thing about this is we can try and be disciplined. We can try and say, oh, yeah, no, I have a strong will. I'm going to be disciplined. But if we're violating natural law in our body will get its needs met. And so it doesn't matter how disciplined someone is. If they are not doing things to decompress the stress, then their brain is going to crave adrenaline. And if they resist that craving long enough, their brain, the animal side of the brain will take over and they will experience adrenaline one way or another. And so there's this element of if we follow natural law in our body, then we can break this addictive cycle. And so there were studies done at Stanford University, I think this was back in the 70s, when they started to study the effect of meditation on the brain. And certain types of meditation would actually put the brain into a state that was not a normal state of activity. It was called wakeful resting, I think is what they called it. And so it was a resting state and yet the person was still alert and awake. And it was this totally out of the norm from all the brain studies of saying, okay, there's resting state, there's sleeping brain, there's rapid eye movement, there's these different levels that the brain goes into. And meditation put people into an entirely different category that did not occur naturally. And mm-hmm. what they found is that state of restful, what did I call it? Restful waking or waking restful? I don't even know. Basically, it's you're alert and your body has gone into the state of deep rest. And they found that in that state, it was more restful on the system than sleep.
Wow.
And the body released more stress out of the central nervous system than sleeping. And so what we can do, there are ways for us to manage our life in a way where we don't need the addictive elements. And so, you know, for me, when I met, my teacher's name is Tom Bell, and his website is transcendingthemadness.com, transcendingthemadness.com. And Tom has worked with a lot of famous people and leaders around the world, you know, Diana Ross and Anthony Hopkins and the Beatles
wow.
and Beach Boys, Michael Jackson, and just like lots of different people had gone to him because he's the best. And I was teaching a seminar, and I used to teach these six-day seminars, and I'd be on stage from 8 in the morning until like 6 at night and then go do evening events till midnight. And
wow.
Six days in a row, and I'd get so jacked up, wasted out of my mind, that by the fifth or sixth day, I had to have like an IV of caffeine running through my arm just to stay awake. It was so brutal. And he met me, he was at one of the events, and he came up, and he was so tactful about how he's like, dude, you seem a little stressed out. And, you know, my eyes were twitching. I'm like, oh, really? No, I'm fine. He piqued my interest. And so I actually flew him out from, he lives in Hawaii. I flew him out from Maui to our house, and he taught my wife and I and a couple of other friends how to meditate. And I have done it almost every day since. This was years ago.
Wow.
And not because I'm a super consistent person. I'm somewhat sporadic. I consistently sleep because my body demands it. I consistently drink water and eat food because my body demands it, and I consistently meditate because I don't know how to function if I don't. Well, no, that's not true. I know how to function without meditation, and it's with a myriad of addictions.
Right.
You know, that's just, I much prefer the peace that comes with meditation than the never-ending cycle of cravings and compulsion that comes with addiction. So that's why I meditate. I don't know how to function without it. And I remember hearing Wayne Dyer say that once, years ago, 15 years ago, I was listening to a program, and he said, I just don't know how I'd face life without meditation. I thought, that's ridiculous. What in the world can 20 minutes twice a day do? Like,
right.
What kind of, you sit there quietly for 20 minutes twice a day? Like, how is that helping your life? I just don't get it. And now I look at it and I go, wow, I feel sorry for people who don't know how to meditate.
Huh.
So, here's what's happening. This is why we get addicted. We are violating natural law in our body. We're adding too much stress to the central nervous system, and we have a shame-based identity. So if we're pushing the machine beyond what it was intended to do, our inner dialogue is destructive and is based on a lie, and that lie is that we are bad, and we add too much stress without taking enough stress off. And that's the perfect recipe for addiction. So some of the things that have to happen in order to break this cycle is we have to take a look at how to break the shame cycle. And what's really valuable is to be able to look at our behaviors and recognize that when we act out addictively and compulsively, it's perfect. It's the perfect response to the stimulus that we put on our machine. You know, it's like running a program on a computer. If you run a program that goes 1 plus 1 and it says it equals 2, that's correct.
Right.
And so if we run a life, if we have a life where we're eating overstimulating foods, we have a self-image that says that we suck, that we're bad, we can't be loved, and we overaccumulate stress all day long, and we don't have any healthy outlets of decompressing it. Well, of course we're going to have addictions. It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I like about life is you just get a new chance every single day.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's like this wonderful gift from the universe from God that says, okay, cool, try again.
Yep.
Sun comes up. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
The seasons keep repeating. It's like, okay, how did that go for you? And I personally believe that life is about choice and consequence. We get to choose things, then we experience the consequence, and then we can decide if we like those consequences. We get to plant a garden, we get to reap the harvest, and then we get to decide if we like that harvest. And then we have a period of time that is the winter, you know, when we can't harvest, and we have to live with what we created for a while, and then the spring comes and we get a new chance. We get to start again. And the more we follow natural law with our life, the greater the harvest. It's just the lesson we just keep getting taught year after year after year. And unfortunately, our modern culture, it just sort of like sets people up on this impossible standard of, you know, the people we look up to are often just totally out of balance. They're violating natural law in their body, and we think if I could just be like them, then I'd finally be enough.
Right.
You know, if I could just get more money, then I'd be enough. If I could just get that partner, then I'd be enough. Mm-hmm. If I could just get some recognition and some validation that I was awesome, then I'd be enough. Yep. Challenge is there is no quantity of those things that will make you enough. Being enough is not an external game. And I can tell you this from having experienced a lot of those things. All these dreams I had of achievement, a lot of them were rooted in to try to get some validation because I thought I sucked.
Huh.
And I grew up and I had people tell me I sucked and I was a loser and I'd never make anything of myself. And I had, you know, I got rejected very painfully by girls when I was a kid, and I, you know, just like, I just had a self-image that I was a bad person because, you know, I'd had a couple of reckless years as a teenager and sort of stuck in my mind that I was second class on some levels, and so there was this need to try and prove something, prove those people wrong that told me I was a loser.
Right.
The problem is, it didn't matter how much money I made or what kind of toys I got or what kind of trips I took or any of the things that I thought were going to make me enough. Didn't matter how big the house was I lived in. It never was enough on the inside. And it's so interesting to me to be in this place in my life today where I've arrived. And it has nothing to do with how much money I have in the bank. It has nothing to do with any external success or failure. It has nothing to do with my relationships. Has nothing to do with approval from people on the outside or how good or bad I'm being. I've arrived because I got to this place of having compassion on myself, recognizing that every choice I made was just trying to fix pain in my life. I did the best I could with what I had. I was handed patterns that were guaranteed to lead to addiction. And so, of course, they did. And now I've learned some tools that when I use these tools, I don't experience the addiction. And so to get to this place of recognizing, this is how I look at it. If someone has spiritual beliefs, they can say, I'm a child of God with infinite worth. And I've got a lot of friends that don't have spiritual beliefs. They're like, yeah, whatever, get rid of that religious mumbo jumbo. So if someone doesn't have spiritual beliefs, consider your existence. If you're listening to this podcast, and you have conscious awareness that you exist. Most of the animals on this planet don't consciously think, I exist, or I have thoughts. Wow, I have a body. I can experience the sensation of this body, and I can observe how my big toe feels right now. It's like this ability to have conscious awareness is a miracle in and of itself. And if someone doesn't have spiritual beliefs, consider the chances of your existence. I mean, it is such a miracle that we exist and that we have consciousness. So there was this big explosion in the universe and this one, you know, accumulation of dust and matter started circling around this ball of fire and it was the exact perfect distance to support life. And then some amoeba divided in the water and became a frog and crawled out and started breathing, and then eventually became, you know, a human being. And thousands and thousands and thousands or millions of years of human beings mating and reproducing end up a sperm and an egg inside of a woman's uterus that came out, and all of a sudden at, you know, 10 or 11 or 15 or 20 years old, you went, this is me. it's freaking incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know?
It is. I was just watching a TED Talk, not to interrupt you, but I forget her name. She's, I'll have to look it up, but she was explaining how the probability of us being born is 1 out of like 900,000, or it's even bigger than that. It's like infinite. It's crazy, the possibility that we're here and why we're here. So, yeah, just not to interrupt, but, yeah, it's just, it is.
No,
it's phenomenal,
it's wonderful
concept.
I appreciate it. Yeah, so to consider that who we are is a miracle of the universe, and we get this finite amount of time in which we can use this physical body and direct it and move it and express it, and we can create something with it, whatever we choose to create. And I don't think one creation is greater than another, because at the end of the day, it's all sandcastles that get washed away anyway.
Right.
But we get to express. We get to take something inside of us that calls out to be expressed, and we get to take the physical body and express it for a finite amount of time, and then we know the physical body will die. And then what happens after that, we can all speculate on, right?
Right.
But in this moment, to take a look at it and say, you are not bad. You're a miracle of the universe. You're a miracle of expression and creation. The behaviors that you have done are accumulation of all the patterns you were given as a child before you had a chance to even observe them. And you coped with life through these different behaviors. And you can look at certain behaviors and separate your behavior from your worth. And you can say, okay, yeah, I have worth. I am a miracle of creation. I'm a child of God with infinite worth. And I did something that doesn't serve me. And I did it to try and get a fix. And now I'm going to make a new choice. But I'm not going to shame myself. It's choice and consequence. So it's interesting in our modern era, when we think about when we experience too much stress, all the different distractions that are available to give us adrenaline. You know, we get up in the morning, we spike the adrenal glands with coffee and sugar and all, you know, whatever else we high-processed stuff we eat. We then read the newspaper or get online and read the news, which is all about fight or flight.
Right.
Right? It's danger. It's risk. And it spikes the adrenal glands. So we experience adrenaline. And then we get in our car and we have this crazy drive that would have made our ancestors pass out. You know, like guaranteed death if we misdirect the vehicle just a little bit. And so our adrenal glands are pumping the whole time. We go to work. We have all this pressure on us all day long. We get super tired. And what do? Then we got to spike it with soda, candy, sugar. Spike the adrenals again. Come home at night, wasted. And then what do we have to do? We have to numb out our mind, numb out our thoughts. We have to just, like, make it all go away. So we get on Facebook, or we watch sports and have that adrenaline. Or Facebook's a funny one because most people don't think of it as an addiction. But consider what happens. When you post something on Facebook, how do you feel? You're on Facebook.
Yep.
So when you make a little comment, you do something funny, or you post a picture that you liked, what emotion do you get?
You get excitement. It's that validation, just like you're talking about.
I know.
And people are addicted to it. It's great.
It triggers the brain chemicals, right? We say
exactly.
Something that feels like we... Well, that's why we get addicted to it, because it's a way for us to push a button and get to this little feel-good chemical.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Bing.
Instantaneously.
Validation. Bing. Validation. Bing. Validation. Right? So it's like a video game that gives us the brain chemicals that we want.
Exactly.
But if you consider all the different things that we do, what we're trying to do is numb out the mind. We're trying to give it something to focus on besides the stress that's in our nervous system. So I'm going to give you like a kind of a short list of the four things I think we need to address in order to really overcome the negative addictions in our life and replace them with positive addictions. Because I think human nature is we're prone to become addicted to things. And I don't have, I mean, I could go on for weeks talking about each of these. And so obviously this is like a little tiny snippet. I have a couple of programs that may be useful for people that go through this information. One of them is we did this in the area of pornography addiction because it's such a taboo subject. Nobody wants to talk about it, but it's this giant problem. You know, like somewhere like 60% of the divorces today list pornography addiction as a reason for the divorce.
Wow.
And it's just a massive epidemic problem. And no one wants to talk about it. So we have a website called curethecraving.com, curethecraving.com. And that has free and anonymous tools for people dealing with this addiction. For people that have other types of issues, I have a program called the Creation Mastermind. And this program is where we help people take on a goal. We create a skeleton plan of a goal, which is the simplest operating model of that goal. And then for 12 weeks, we go through the process of creating it. But part of what we address in the Creation Mastermind are these four steps I'm going to tell you of what we can do to get this harmony back in our lives. You know, we can't really have balance, but we can have harmony between the parts of our lives. And this is what we teach in the Creation Mastermind. We're probably going to start a group soon. You're going to have to sign up because currently it's the groups are closed. But once we start a new group, if you go to the website and sign up, we'll send you out some information. You can get involved in it. But it's creationmastermind.com. But anyway, so here's the four areas that we address in the Creation Mastermind. Number one, the body. If we're going to want to slow, you know, like change addictive behaviors, we have to look at the physical body because we become addicted to this in our brain. So it's, you know, like we get hardwired for this behavior. So we have to slow the body down. We have to feed the body. Because if we don't give it the food nature intended, then we're going to stay addicted. I got a buddy of mine that got some addiction issues, and he calls me up and he's like, man, I gotta deal with this. And whenever he calls me, it seems like every time he calls me, he's going through the drive-through of some major restaurant, like, you know, like McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's. He's like going through the drive-through every time he talks, and he's getting some gigantic soda and a bunch of processed food. And I say to him, bro, I can't help you with your addictions because you're causing them by eating that crap.
Right.
You're causing it by creating a war zone inside your body that your brain just has to escape from. So part of the game is with our physical body, we have to fill it with food that nature intended.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like actually feed it because, you know, it's an organ. It needs the basic building blocks in order to thrive. And if we're spiking it with things that are really toxic and very difficult for it to process, then we're going to have to escape from that uncomfortable experience. It's like a war inside we've created. We got to escape from the war. What do we need? We need some more addictions. So my opinion on addiction is you can't just take away the addiction. Because the person will go crazy. Their brain will go nuts, and they'll crave it, and then they'll act out compulsively, and then they'll experience shame, and they'll think they can't ever quit, and they're a loser.
Right.
My preference is to fill themselves with so much of what they actually need that there's less need over time for the addiction.
Ah.
And so it's filling your body with, like, if somebody has an eating addiction, one of the things that they could do is fill their body with a bunch of unprocessed foods and then still have a little bit of the cookies. So if somebody goes and has like a, you know, I like to make a green smoothie in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a blend of spinach, kale, an apple and orange, banana, strawberry, blueberry, flaxseed, chia seed, almonds. I blend it all up in my Vitamix and I drink it all down. And so it's all this unprocessed food in its natural state, basically already digested. You know, if somebody has blood sugar issues, they can cut some of the fruit out of it and they can put in, you know, more vegetables, celery and things like that. But there's ways to do this. It tastes incredible. It's so good. You don't taste the greens. It's just like this green smoothie that looks like it tastes like a fruit drink. Delicious. So but it fills my body with those things I need. So if somebody has an eating problem, I would suggest, this is just my personal opinion, I'm not an expert, so I can just say my opinion, is fill themselves with food they really need. If they're getting the munchies, go eat a big old bowl of oatmeal.
Right.
Nobody ever got overweight eating too much oatmeal or too much spinach. Right? Eat a bunch of beans and rice. Like, actually cook the rice and cook the beans so that it's a complete protein. Eat a big old bowl of beans and rice if you're hungry, or put it on a salad so you get the greens with it, and fill yourself up so you feel nice and full and satisfied. And if you want to eat a cookie, eat a freaking cookie. I don't care.
Right.
One cookie doesn't make somebody fat. It's a plate of cookies that does.
Exactly.
Right? So if we fill ourselves with the things that we actually need, then we don't need to escape as much. So anyway, we look at our physical body. We feed it. We have to slow it down. We have to rest it, and we have to move it. Then we look at the mind. Because I know people that get their bodies in order. They eat really clean, and they, you know, they rest, and they exercise and all this stuff, and yet they're a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because within their mind it's a destructive thought process. The inner dialogue is destructive. And so what we have to do is break the shame cycle. We have to replace the negative inner thoughts with positive. So what I like to do with my clients is I'll take a recording of their voice speaking a list of new beliefs to themselves. And then I'll mix that with proprietary Mozart music that has been shown to stimulate the left and right sides of the brain when we listen to it, so that the thoughts are absorbed deeper into the subconscious mind. And so they will listen to this recording of themselves for 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes at night. So first thing when they start their day, they hear a bunch of powerful belief systems. As they end their day, they hear a bunch of powerful belief systems. What happens is, the way in our physical body, if we don't use our muscles, those muscles will atrophy, meaning they'll just sort of wither away. Same thing in our brain. If we don't think destructive thoughts, they just sort of dissipate. Challenge is, if we try to not think destructive thoughts, what do we end up thinking about? It's like this. Try to not think about a white rabbit. Right? Try to not think about a pink flamingo in someone's yard. Like, all these things that you weren't even thinking about a second ago, now you can't help but to get... It's like you see a whole yard with, like, 100 pink flamingos. Try to not think of a satellite dish on someone's roof. And you're like, oh. Try to not think of one of those Allstate commercials about mayhem. Right?
That's a good one.
Anytime we try to not think about something, we actually think about it. So, again, it's about choosing the new thoughts we're going to think about and just letting the others be. So once we can settle down the mind and get the mind in a constructive, forward-moving direction, then we look at the spirit. So it goes body, mind, spirit, and the last one is stress management. But we'll talk about the spirit first. So I've heard some people in spiritual groups, religious organizations, and they go, your addictions are bad. You're a bad boy. God's mad at you because you're being naughty. And you better just stop. You better get spiritual. That's what they would say to me. And so the problem is, somebody's body is all jacked up. They're feeding it crap. It's running a compulsive cycle. And their mental state is full of shame and negative self-talk. If they sit down and try to get still, they're going to go crazy. Because
right.
All that's going to come out is all this stuff they've been running from. The negative dialogue, the doubts about themselves, the shame, like all their inner demons come out when they try to get still, and so they're like, spiritual stuff, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say you first get your body in alignment, get your mind to where you're thinking in good directions, and then you can experience stillness if you choose to set aside the time. And that can be different for different people. Some people's stillness is sitting in a room listening to classical music. Some people's stillness is the quiet hours of the morning, reading a book, or sitting by a fire, or going on a walk, or going and sitting in nature. Some people, their stillness is sitting in a church and praying. Like, it's a little different for everybody. But there's this element of becoming still. It's critically important if we want to be able to hear the inner voice and have creativity. I read the Steve Jobs biography recently. And one of the things that he stresses in there is that the reason Apple is, well, currently is one of the most valuable companies in the world. The reason they've been so successful is he always looked for a combination of two traits with the people that he brought on. Number one, they had to listen to their intuition. Because some of the greatest ideas would come from their intuition. Steve Jobs was a big believer in meditation. And so he believed in listening to the intuition. But the other part of it was that he looked for was someone who had enough self-discipline to actually take that intuition and go through the really difficult labor of making it something real in the world.
Right.
And what he was finding was he'd find a lot of people that were spiritual. They'd be all like, oh, I'm all in touch with the universe, and I'm all spiritual and all these things. But they had no self-discipline. They couldn't get themselves to do something hard. And then he'd find all these engineers that would be like punching out widgets all day long, and they're like, okay, just give me the input, I'll give you the output, punching out the widgets, but they had no creativity.
Huh.
They couldn't think outside of the box of what they were told to do. They had a lot of discipline, a lot of work ethic, and they would work really hard, but they just couldn't think. So he looked for people that had a combination of creativity and intuition and discipline and a work ethic. And so when we talk about being an entrepreneur, because I think a lot of the people who listen to this are entrepreneurs on some level, even if they have a job and they're an employee, they can treat their job like they're an entrepreneur. But if they can combine the element of the intuition with the element of the self-discipline, and their body's not going crazy and their mind's not going crazy, they can take their vision and make it something real in the world. When people say, well, what is the creation master? I'm like, what do? I take people who are stuck in self-sabotage and who are unable to reach their goals, and I teach them the natural law principles of creation so they can take their vision and make it something real in the world. That's what the Creation Mastermind does. It's funny because it's not an addiction recovery program, but it ends up being an addiction recovery program. Because
wow.
People all deal with it along the way when they're trying to create. So it goes body, mind, spirit, and then stress management. Stress management has to become a habit in our life. Why? Because stress is a habit in our life. And it's not going away.
Right.
You know what I mean? Stress is not gonna stop. And so we have to develop habits, daily coping skills of decompressing the stress, because the stress is going to accumulate. We just have to let off the steam. And when we do that, we come into harmony with the way our body was designed to operate. Our mind, our inner chatter, becomes constructive and nurturing. We can get still and listen to our inner voice and get ideas that are far greater than anything we could have imagined ourselves. And then we can take that and with discipline take the vision we receive and make it real in the world. That's the magic. So I look at my addictions as one of the greatest gifts of my existence. Because without them, I wouldn't have hurt enough to seek this information.
Right.
And they continue to be a guide and a friend to me. Because as soon as I start violating natural law and not listening to my body and not listening, you know, having negative chatter and not getting still and listening and not managing my stress, guess what comes back? My brain just creates cravings. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a signal. There's nothing wrong with cravings. Cravings aren't bad. Cravings are the brain's way of saying, you're out of alignment, dude.
Right.
You're violating natural law, get it back in order. So if I get cravings, now I look at it and I go, whoa, it's like the fire alarm going off, the smoke detector going off. I'm like, whoop, is there a fire? I say, hey, do I need to sleep more? Do I need to eat some really grounding food? Do I need to get still and connect? Do I need to go and have some adventure so I get some adrenaline in my system? Do I need to do something dangerous or scary? So I just look at it as a signal, and when I get it back in alignment, guess what? Cravings, they just go away. They just go back because there's no need for it. take care of the machine, there's no need to get out of it.
Right.
So, here's what I want to do. If that's okay with you, Chris. I'd like to end this training, because we're right about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to end it with a little meditation practice, because a lot of people go, I don't know how to meditate. When I sit down to meditate, my mind goes crazy.
Right.
I can't stand it. I can't stand it. Is it okay if I know we're a little long. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So, and I'll put in the little thing for, you know, tell about the websites again here, because at the end I'm going to leave you in a quiet place.
Okay.
So the for people that want information on the pornography addiction stuff, it's curethecraving.com, CureTheCraving. And then for those that want to learn how to take the natural law steps of creation and make your vision something real in the world, it's creationmastermind.com. Okay, so here's the deal with meditation. The intent of meditation is not to quiet the mind. Well, sort of is. But the mind will never be completely quiet. I don't think anyone gets to this place where there is not chatter in the mind and there's not distraction in the mind. So that's not the goal. The goal is not, because I used to meditate. I'd try to meditate, and I'd sit down and go, okay, got to meditate.
Right.
Okay, no thoughts. Oh, frick, that's a thought. Oh, that one is too. Oh, I can't do that. All right?
Yep.
The game is not to clear the mind. The game is to decompress the stress. It's like push-ups. It's a technique. It's to just allow the mind a place to dump all the thoughts that are swirling around. And the way we do that is we learn from our dreams, because if rest is the way that our body decompresses the stress, then we look at what happens when we're dreaming. And I don't know about you, but I'll have dreams that have a lot of emotion to them.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and I'll call some image will come up in my dream, some scenario, and I'll feel it as if it's real. And I'll feel the emotions of it, and then all of a sudden scenario two pops up, and it's like boom, it just distracts me and captures my attention, and I just drop the original feelings.
Right.
And I feel the new feelings of scenario two, and I'll be going along on that ride for a second, and then all of a sudden scenario three pops up, boom. And I'll feel the new emotions of scenario three, and I just drop the emotions of scenario two.
Yeah.
And I'm going along on that ride, and then all of a sudden I'll, like, move around and be like, and I'll wake up and be like, wow, that was trippy. And I'll roll over
right.
and go to sleep, and it'll happen again.
Uh-huh.
So what's happening is when we feel those feelings, our body's releasing that from our nervous system. So what's going to happen when we meditate is going to be similar. We're going to sit down and we're going to choose a focal point. Because we already know that if we try to not think of something, then we'll think about it. So if we sit there and meditate and go, don't think, don't think, don't think, then, it won't work, right? Or
mm-hmm.
or if anger comes up in our meditation and we're like, don't be angry, it doesn't work. So we know that.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need is we need a focal point to go back to when the emotions do show up, because they will. Whatever is going on in there is going to show up. Sometimes the more stressful we are, the less peaceful the meditation is. But it's okay. We do the technique anyway because it's useful. It helps decompress that stress, even though it's not super peaceful. So the simple meditation I'm going to teach you right now, we'll just do it for a couple of minutes, and then you can continue it if you'd like,
okay.
is to observe your breathing and just pay attention to the inhale and the exhale. Now, what's going to happen is that thoughts are going to come up. Distractions are going to come up. Things are going to come up. It's okay. Don't fight it. Let that be. That's your nervous system just releasing things. So as soon as you realize you've gotten hooked on those thoughts and those emotions and all that stuff, the distractions, very effortlessly come back to observing your breathing. Now, my preferred way of doing this is to observe my stomach when I breathe. So just pay attention to your stomach right now. You can touch it with your hands if you want to. Okay, and then just notice that as you inhale, how that feels in your stomach. As your stomach rises, your diaphragm rises, and then as you exhale, And you can just hold your focus right there on your stomach. And just notice as it inhales, it rises a bit, expands, then exhales, and it settles back down. Now, I prefer to sit either in a chair comfortably or against a wall with a pillow behind my back so I don't notice any discomfort in my body. I am currently unable to cross my legs over each other in the lotus position, so I don't think it's necessary. You don't have to be some kind of flexible yogi to be able to meditate effectively. So what we're going to do is, and I do not lean my head back against anything behind me, because if I do, I'll fall asleep. Now, if you end up falling asleep, that's fine. It's just what your body needed. But you want to hold your head upright. And then I find that sometimes a few minutes into the meditation, sometimes my head will start bobbing if I'm really tired. So I'll go ahead and let it lean forward and rest my chin on my chest and continue the meditation. If I fall asleep, I just let that be what my body needed. So the idea is to do this 20 minutes in the morning, start your day off by decompressing the system, and then 8 or 10 hours later, take 20 minutes and do it again, sometime in the afternoon or evening, so that you're constantly letting off the steam in the morning and the afternoon. So what we'll do is we're just going to take a few minutes and get quiet. So go ahead and sit in a comfortable position and let whatever shows up show up. We want to approach this like a child would approach something for the first time. Just allowing it to be without any expectation. Don't expect to get to some state of nirvana where you levitate across the room and you know, you have some angelic visitation or whatever. I have yet to have that happen. So don't be having some expectation of some crazy blissful place, some fantasy land. It's just real life. It's a real body. It's a real meditation. That's why it works. That's why the fantasy stuff doesn't work. Okay,
right.
So close your eyes. And just notice that with your eyes closed, you're able to get a little bit quiet. Might be some thoughts that come up. Just let them be. I'll try to find them. And just effortlessly allow your attention to drift down to your stomach. And as you inhale, take a breath. Experience the breathing with your focus on your stomach. Then exhale. And go ahead and just breathe at whatever level you'd like to. No need to breathe giant breaths. I kind of like to start with a few big breaths. If your breathing becomes shallow, let that be what it is. We're just going to take a minute or two here. And just focus on your breathing. Notice that already, likely that some thoughts have come up and you've followed those thoughts. You've been hooked by them. The mind's way. Nothing wrong with it, means your mind is working perfectly. Just effortlessly bring your attention back to your stomach and experience breathing with your attention focused on your stomach. The experience of meditation is an active experience because we're constantly just gently shifting our attention back to our stomach, back to the breathing. The inhale, the rise, the exhale, the fall. It requires an active focus rather than letting our mind just wander. It's coming gently, easily, effortlessly back to this place. Now, normally we'd continue this for about 20 minutes. I'm going to allow you to remain in this space and just observe the fruits of this experience. And then it's very important, at the end of the meditation, that we don't just get up and dive right into activity. We want to give our body 1 or 2 or 3 minutes, preferably like 3 minutes, to integrate what we've experienced into our body. So you no longer focus your attention on the breathing. Just quietly observe this new sensation in your body. Just observe whatever changes have happened, if any, or what changes haven't happened. It takes about 3 minutes to come out of it so that you really absorb the rest into your body that you've done. So if you'd like to continue to meditate for the full 20 minutes, that's a great practice. And if you'd like, you can just notice the shift just in these couple of minutes that we've done. And this is a tool that you can use anytime, anywhere, any place, any situation. Simply reset the system. And I'm just going to leave you in this place. And Chris, I appreciate you having me on, and we will continue this dialogue.